You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, hey, it's everyone's favorite Danny DeVito lookalike, Drew Gasparini here with another special episode of Now We're Talking, the podcast that has been deemed as unlistenable by my mother. I was so happy to get the chance to sit down with today's guest because she has been in my life since we were both children. We did theater as kids, we sang in a cappella groups together, we did a little bit of growing up together. All the cool shit. She is currently an unstoppable force in the music world as one of the songwriters and lead singers of the band Delta Ray. In this episode, we talk about life, we talk about dogs, depression, theater, music, and of course, her couch. Exciting shit! Ladies and gentlemen, now we're talking with Brittany Holges.
Brittany Holges, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm hello. So good. Hello.
Everybody who's listening, Brittany Holges is one of the singers and songwriters, I believe. Yes, ooh, of Delta Ray. Yeah, you get in there with that songwriting.
I do.
Hold on. Gordon, come here and have a bully stick. Gordon's my sidekick this episode because no one else is here. Everyone's getting COVID tested right now.
I want to hear his squeaks. Don't silence him.
I won't. I'll let him squeak, but I'm scared they'll turn into let me out of here whimpers.
Let me squeak. Yeah.
Yeah, let him squeak in peace. Anyway, so Brittany, you are, of course, part of the band Delta Ray, but you're so much more, and we're going to talk about a lot of that. I'm so happy you're doing this podcast, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I think out of everybody who's been on this podcast so far, we've had about 16 guests thus far, and I've known you the longest by a lot.
Yeah!
Is that so crazy to think about? I just think that's wild to think about that I'm even in touch with people from that era of my life.
I'm so grateful though, right? Because it really keeps you humble.
100%. It does. It keeps me humble, remembers my roots and everything. But it doesn't help that like the people that I'm close to are you guys and you've all skyrocketed into gigantic
I was fame. Literally about to say that. I was like, it keeps you humble, but then it also makes you be like, wait, what was going on in our
Was in the water. Yeah. Something was in the water back then, and we've all risen, of course, to like catastrophic, gigantic successes in our lives. So with all this you have going on currently, I'm going to ask you what I think everybody wants to know. First question for you.
Got it.
If I, Drew, me.
Yes, sure.
If I was an animal, what animal would that be? Please.
Oh, man, this is
I feel
amazing.
Like you have some sort of superpower to just tell somebody.
I am really good at this sort of thing. And you really are, you're a woodland creature.
Okay.
If you thought you were something else,
we'll get into what I think I am, but keep going. I'm a woodland creature.
Yeah. And I would probably call you like, oh God, I'm going to say you're foxy.
I like
to me, you're kind of a gray fox.
This is great. This is actually great. I think in my younger years, I was a red fox, but now the gray, you could say woodland creature, but I think we refer to them as critters. I was hoping it wasn't going to be like skunk or something.
No,
like
you're
that.
A majestic critter for
a
sure.
A majestic critter like a gray fox. I always thought I was more of like a tiger dragon combination.
Wow. Okay.
Is that, am I thinking too highly of myself? What do you think?
I think that you underestimate how cozy you are and how cozy your vibe is.
I do.
You think that you are in this like space of the zodiac that you're not in constellation zone.
All right.
You are someone who I like round a corner in on my hike. And you're a little gray fox, like having coffee.
See, having coffee, which is a really nice touch.
In a tweed hat.
There's like a Winnie the Pooh element to everything you're saying. In my mind, I was like, you'd be on the hike, you'd turn the corner, and you're like, what is that? A dragon tiger? Very muscular, probably.
No, it's like you're a Narnia creature who's like, oh, sit down for tea then.
Oh, I'm not the Narnia creature that says, charge! And has superpowers that blast out of my eyeballs.
No.
On the same exact topic, isn't this fun already? What are we talking about? Brittany, what are we fucking talking about?
Well, wait, I just want to make it clear, like, I'm a lion. But you are not.
Okay. Why do you jump to lion? By the way, this is why I asked this stupid question, is because I wanted to get to this lion thing that I see. You and your fans, everybody in Deltarae, seem to recognize that you're this lion, lioness kind of thing. Why do you feel like you have that energy, and how did you feel like sinking into that and just owning it?
Well, first of all, I have felt it for a long time, and I will tell you the main reasons being that my my sign is a Leo.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. My sign is the manatee. It's rare on the zodiac chart, but you'll find him hidden.
I didn't know there was a gray fox wearing a tweed hat and a scarf drinking coffee constellation, but there is. And whenever Mercury passes through there, shit is messed up.
Absolutely. Wow.
So, but also my middle name is literally Lions.
What is it? Oh, it is? Your middle name is Lions?
Brittany Lions, yeah.
That's so badass. Where'd you get that name?
Yeah, it's my grandmother's maiden name, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Mine is Harry Knuckles. So it's weird. That was my grandmother's maiden name. I just thought that was an interesting touch. Okay, let's go back. We're going to go back. I want to go to things that people can't necessarily Google about you. And okay. I have the great privilege of having known you since you were probably like 13 or something.
Yeah, why don't they just ask you? No, you've known me since I was 13 as like a human person.
Yeah.
But I guess I should say I've known you since I was like 8.
That's...
Isn't that weird?
Because I was your babysitter once upon a time. That's what it sounds like. I've known you since I was 8. Yeah, well, because I was friends with your older brothers, also part of the band Deltarae, Ian and Eric. Yeah, of course. There was a part of me that was going to ask all three of you to be on this. And then I was like, we won't get anything done.
Oh,
and the reason I know that is because I've had many a sleepover at your guys' house growing up. And as songwriters, I was a young songwriter in high school, just like all of you guys were. And Eric and Ian, the arguments that would ensue over and the insults that would fly back and forth, it got so heated so fast. So here's a question about that dynamic. Yeah. Growing up in a household with two brothers and a father who is like a wrestling champion at Duke or whatever, it's like you have a Nordic looking, like they're wizards, they're warriors, they're big men. How did it feel being in that environment? And there was like this built-in competition thing between Ian and Eric, it seemed. What was it like for you?
Well, so it goes back to your earlier question about my inner spirit being a lioness, because I for sure cut my teeth in that household full of like loud and dominant energy, creative men.
Yes.
So, you know, I always really like you, Ian, Eric, like you occupy an echelon of space in my mind of songwriter and musician and artist that is like, you can't really recreate what I grew up with, which was just like kids who are a little bit older than me, but like who are making music, which is a magic, like that is a superpower.
I agree. Yeah.
And so I had your music and your voice in my ears, my brother's voices.
I am so sorry about that, by the way.
Well, oh, trust me, the shit that I give my brothers about their early recordings, like...
Oh, I have some of those recordings somewhere in the world
ever
still.
Share them ever. And if you examine the lyrics, it is really telling.
Atrocious? Can we use the word atrocious?
Very.
Well, everybody's made big leaps in their life, and we're all very happy for where they ended up.
My brothers were like, yeah, they were deeply competitive, but in a way that was like collaborative. Or it was like, if you win, I also won, but I still want to beat you.
It makes sense to me. I think I understand a bit of that dynamic because I'm also from a big family. We were not competitive in that same way, but the idea of besting somebody within the family and in that dynamic was always kind of part of the arc in there. Another little factoid that I think is hysterical about your family is not an uh-oh, it's actually amazing. Your father has a hand the size of a spare tire. And he, like I said, he's like, what is he, 6'9"? He's something gigantic. 6'7", but you know what? Let's just chalk it up to a gentleman 6'9".
Okay, yeah, and sure.
He's big. He's broad. He was a wrestler, like I said. And when I was growing up around that household, the one thing that I knew about him was that he was a toy inventor, basically. That's what he did, which is like the coolest, like nerdiest and gentlest profession. And then you look at the guy and you're like, how come you're not rowing a gigantic ship all by yourself?
Right. You know? Yeah, he's got like a real Paul Bunyan, like,
very
vibe.
Much so. A clean shaven Paul Bunyan, absolutely. Yeah. But yes. Then it looks like he's the older, more attractive brother of whatever that wizard's name who picks up Harry Potter and brings him to Hogwarts.
Hagrid, for sure.
Thank you.
For sure.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. He is a Hagrid figure if you ever met
a Hagrid figure.
But like crew cut and like very,
well,
like
kept,
in a
absolutely.
Sweater. Yeah. Dad vibes.
But, dad vibes.
But also like super weird and unusual, like a weird, unusual dude who like talks a mile a minute, roughs you up when he sees you.
He's intimidating.
He's intimidating, but also like if a bird flew into the window at our house, like he would go out and collect it and stroke it with a pine needle for like 2 hours until it woke up.
Gorgeous. I mean, that's beautiful. I remember one time I gave him a hug, and just in that one gentle hug, I blacked out and fell on the ground. So I want to stick in this little area of childhood a little bit, because there are some aspects that I don't know, and I don't know if your fans know, and I knew that you did theater and all that stuff growing up, but I want to know what it felt like going to high school. You had these two older brothers who made quite a stamp in the hometown with sports and with music and with theater. You were the youngest, so it always kind of feels like you're following what has already been set up for you. Were you bullied in high school? Were you well-respected in high school? What was your life in high school? Tell me.
So I don't know if you know that. First of all, my brothers were nerdy AF in a cool way, if that makes sense. Like, they made great grades. They were super, like, straight arrows. My parents are super strict. Much strict, like I always was jealous of your family because it just seemed like you guys were way more fun.
Yeah.
Don't even bring up that one time. Don't bring it up. But you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And so when I got to high school, like I definitely felt this feeling of, first of all, my brothers like didn't get into the schools they wanted to go to. It was like, they tried so hard and were such like good kids, and then they still didn't get kind of the things they were, you know, promised for doing all of that work and making all of those sacrifices.
Right.
They weren't super social. Like, I always laugh that like you're one of their two friends. but that's not totally true, but it's kind of true. Like, they just made a few best friends and that's it. And anyway, I got in there. And I was always like just separate. Like, they wrote music together. They were a team. They were in competition. And I didn't really want to be part of that competition in my younger days. And I really didn't want to be part of it in high school. And also I was like screw all of your sacrifices being like a good kid. They didn't pay off. So I was also pretty rebellious.
Yeah, girl. Yeah. How did you rebel? What do you mean you were
so
rebellious?
So many ways. Like, I went to parties and I was like super, that lot of talking back, which in my household, like we grew up in a yes ma'am, no sir household.
Absolutely.
So, that was, there was a day where I like put my phone and my keys and my credit card on the table and was like, I'm out, and like walked. Ooh. Out of the house and just walked away.
Oh my God. Walked away? What was the end goal there? Where were you planning on going?
I walked eight miles in one direction and like then just ended up at Liz Hopkins' house.
Oh my God. That is just so kind of badass. Anytime I threatened to run away, I'd literally like tie the handkerchief at the end of a stick and put like one toy in it and sit on the edge of the driveway and keep coming in the house for like fruit roll-ups or something. Like, exactly. I'd keep coming in and be like, don't look at me. I'm just getting a snack. I'm still angry.
I'm still away.
Yeah.
And then I dropped out of high school, which I don't know if you I think you knew that. Did you know
I did
that?
Know that. I totally fucking blanked on that. Yes, you dropped out. And then you went to like Berkeley or right?
Yeah. After sophomore year, I was 15. I dropped out. Hated it. Eric left. So that was the reason. Like Eric went to college and I was like, I can't survive this alone.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow. And so he was your anchor in high school, basically. And then once he was gone.
He was the only reason I didn't go off the deep end, if you know what I mean. Like, he was the only thing. Like, seeing him in the hallways, I was like, ah, crap. I got to, like, I do it for Eric. You know, don't binge drink for Eric. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. My God. Oh, my God.
But for real. And then I went to community college instead. My parents were chill. And they weren't chill. I mean, they were, like, you must do well in your studies, but like, but they let me, which is, you know, the benefit of being the daughter of an inventor and not like, I don't know, a Catholic headmistress. I don't know.
I'm very happy your dad was not a Catholic headmistress. Yes. I agree with that sentiment.
So I went there for 2 years and, got my associate's degree while everybody finished high school.
Amazing.
Ahead of the curve. Yeah.
Amazing. And then, and then after that, it was like, I'm going to go be in a band. That's what it was.
Well, I did.
It was as easy as that.
I transferred and got my bachelor's degree. And then I was like, I'm going to go be in a band. And honestly, like I was reflecting on this now because I'm 31. I started in Deltaray when I was 19. I've like never had an adult life. Like a real life.
I mean, you got a house. Outside. You have a house. You got two jobs. Two dogs. Well, they become jobs.
They are. They really are.
They are jobs. Do you know what my dog does? He backs his ass up into a wall and then shits all over the wall. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's a very interesting thing he does. And just basically refuses to do it outside where I would love him to.
Wow.
But see what I mean when I say dogs are jobs? They're jobs. Beautiful,
they're jobs.
Furry little jobs. Absolutely.
Now, how old is your pup?
Right now, he is 12 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
And I love him very much. He saved my life. He really did.
That's
he really did.
He was
Eric in the hallways of high school. And I was like, all right, for you, I'm not going to binge drink. So that is my dog's role in my life
now. Dude, me too. That's why I got both dogs. I was like, I could come out of this depression on my own. But I think I'd rather be doing it like on a sled being pulled by two dogs.
There's a lot of like high fives I give myself for the things I have been able to kind of navigate by myself. This year was kind of not one of those things.
I think artists like are predisposed or as a result of having like some very questionable endocrine like system stuff going on. Like I think my chemicals are off. And so... you know, it's good because it makes me create and it makes me crave performance and it makes me...
It fuels you in the way that it does. We've said it a lot on this podcast with other artists and because, you know, art is such a fluid thing. It doesn't matter what medium you kind of work it in. The same thing, I believe, is the appeal. And I've talked about it with Eric at great length. And I believe last time I was in Nashville, you and I had a great like heart-to-heart about a lot of this stuff. Artists definitely wear their organs on the outside. Yes, there's chemical stuff with brains, and that's an individual thing as well. But when it comes to how it fuels us, we do rely on feeling things a little too hard.
No, I mean, I think that that's exactly right. Like, Okay.
Sorry, there's a rhinoceros walking through your living room.
I just lost my headphone.
That was perfect. A stampede of hippo and rhino just walked by.
Just one enormous dog.
Huge.
I can't. I mean, yeah.
You have a Volkswagen in your living room with you.
Hello, hello. Sorry for the interruption and sorry for that accent. I just wanted to come by real quick to remind our listeners to go follow Brittany Holges on her social medias. She is a member of the band Deltaray. I know you've heard of them. You can find them on Twitter and Instagram at Deltaray. And you can follow Brittany on Instagram personally at Brittany Hell Yes. In the meantime, after this podcast, of course, why don't you go ahead and listen to Deltaray on Spotify or anywhere the hell else you can hear music. Back to the convo.
I think like, I don't think I could, I think that my, I love it. like, I actually love the richness of life. And I think, like, what you're describing is, in some ways, like, when you're raised in a space where you can kind of witness it and see it and be empathetic to it, but you don't have to go through a lot of those hardships.
Yeah.
It makes you want to create art that helps people understand each other.
100%.
I think that's where I'm at, just in terms of, feeling depressed, but also feeling gratitude. Like,
well,
that
you know,
it's
for,
not the end of the world.
I was just going to say, depression doesn't necessarily mean defeat every time. You know, it doesn't mean that we're down and out and that's the end of this, because it can easily feel that way. But the way we crawl out is by using that as our lifeblood, as our fuel to kind of get us to the next thing. Depression could be translated into comedy and uplifting things as well.
Right.
And you listen to Delta Ray and you guys have like literally this holy sound, this like gospel richness to what you guys do with your voices. And I know that, I mean, I've talked to Eric about it. He has definitely had his bouts of ups and downs, and right here, we're getting a good glimpse into what some areas of your life felt like for you. You translate this into such uplifting amazingness. Your dog has a sack of coins. He would like to buy a drink at the bar.
This is my hat.
Oh my God, this is why. Okay, so because we're on a podcast and I'm not going to edit any of this out, I just want everyone to know that my joy of doing this podcast is being able to see Brittany's dogs, Jericho and Torino, who are enormous animals, walk around in the background and literally play with things in the house. He was just throwing her hat for himself to catch.
You know, it's this feeling that I get from these dogs that they're so much smarter than I realize.
Yeah.
And then they do stuff like that, and I'm like, you asshole.
That's because they're smarter than you realize. They know exactly what they're doing.
He did. He was like, interesting. It seems like you're doing something. You can't follow me into this room where I know you have your hat.
And then he brings it out to show you.
I love to take and pretend it's mine. And I'm like, it's not yours. It's mine. And now look at it. I gave him a toy. Not interested. Not interested at all. Just looking at me like, you are the
worst. Do the two dogs get along? Do they get along?
Yeah, that's actually why I got them. They were best friends. So Jericho I got in April.
Mm-hmm.
Saved my life the first time around.
Yeah.
And he just bruised me with his like bad biting habit.
Yeah.
He'd never been like socialized by anybody. I rescued him from a place and they were like, he's a nightmare. And I was like, bring it on. He's a dog.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a dog. Yeah, I'll take it. Great.
I was like, we're fine.
Yeah.
They speak a language that I can speak. And then when I went back, I was like, maybe I'll foster another. And they're like, how about his best friend? He's been here a year. And I was like, put him in the car. Uh-huh. I talked to them later and they're like, you took our biggest problem animals off our hands.
Wow. And have they been problem animals for you? I mean, honestly, has it been like basically a lovely...
I have controversial dog training tactics, I think. But just meaning that like...
You don't take like the Michael Vick approach.
What's the Michael Vick approach?
You don't recall this from back in the news when Michael Vick was having a dog fighting ring in
Oh,
he went to jail for it and everything. And then he left jail and went right back to the NFL.
You know, I can't remember people's names.
That's okay. I'm Drew, by the way. You're talking to Drew. I've known you since you were 13.
Thank God you said that, because I was...
I was about to call you Tim.
I forgot why I was here. I left Torino literally outside because he's a livestock guardian dog and like super stressed out like inside when I first got him. So I just let him live outside for like... We're in the South, so for all of summer and fall.
Is that controversial to leave a dog outside these days?
In California, it wasn't, I think, like growing up.
Yeah, I left my dogs outside. Dog. Yeah.
Right. But I feel like people are getting more precious about their dogs. I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to make a real quick note to send PETA a gift basket so that they don't get mad at me for everything.
There it is.
They're one of our sponsors. So
right, I'm sure. Anyway, he mellowed out after that time where he just got to be alone and like listen to bird sounds. He was like a much chiller dog.
Dogs are no different than us. That's all the fuck I want to do. Leave me alone and let me listen to my bird sounds.
Okay, sometimes like... I put on bird sounds. I have a clock that chimes bird sounds.
Okay.
I'm a grandma. Do you see this couch by me?
You are old Mother Hubbard. Yes. I am imagining the couch came with the house when you bought it in 1894. Is that...
Oh my God, I bought this couch off Facebook Marketplace and then they were like, well, throw in a rocking chair. I was like, sign me up.
Sign me up. This you had me a rocking chair. Oh my God.
I like this couch because it matches my wallpaper. Do you see my wallpaper?
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You must have 13, 14 grandchildren at this point. Is that accurate in saying so? Oh my
yes,
God.
Exactly.
I wish everybody could see what I'm seeing. It's
all
amazing.
All of them through Immaculate Conception. It's amazing. But I started at grandmother. So it's interesting.
That's I don't know anything about science or sex or how bodies work. Okay. All right. Just for the sake of getting back on some sort of track, I could sit and talk with you forever because of our long history of knowing each other and this, that, and the other. And I think we have just a lot in common in terms of what our mission statement as people are and like how we look at the arts and the giving back to the arts.
And we're both really back, funny.
We're both hysterical. I was going to say that too. I was definitely going to say that. Speaking of funny, do you want to hear something hysterical about my nephew?
Of course. Yes.
My nephew sees me without a shirt on.
Oh, no.
And he says, is that a pelt? Referring to my chest hair, he thought it was a pelt. Like okay. I was wearing a pelt of animal fur that you would tack onto the wall.
I have so many things to say about this. Number one, bless your heart.
Thank you.
Number two.
Thank you.
He said pelt. And that is the most important part of this story is that he has a great vocabulary.
He does these amazing things where he pulls me aside. I love being the uncle. I just love being the uncle. And you've got a new nephew,
Wait,
by the way,
could you
right?
say that again? You love being the what?
The uncle.
Okay.
Am I pronouncing
happening.
It weird?
Yes.
How do you pronounce it?
You're like, uncle.
Uncle. Well, how do you, what is
uncle.
It?
Uncle. I don't know. I
uncle?
Mean,
no, I don't get to, I, no, let's I'm go back gonna, to how.
Uncle, okay, you love being so, an uncle, go on.
I'm a yunkle, and I'm hanging out with my buddy Gabriel, my nephew, and he sure. pulls me aside, and he goes, hey, I watched Grandpa eat garbage the other day, and I said, what? Like, assuming he meant, like junk food or something. He goes, yeah. I'd said, Dad, he was in the other room, I was like, Dad, Gabe said he just watched you eat garbage. And my dad goes, Gabe, you weren't supposed to tell anybody you saw me eating out of the trash.
I love that a lot.
But I love also, a five-year-old who talks like that.
It's wondrous. Kids are wondrous. Like
they are.
Seriously. Like I look at Leo because he's three now. And the stuff he says is just like, I said I was being, obviously, an evil witch with him on the phone the other day. And I was like, I'm going to eat you. Yeah. And then he said, BB, we don't eat people. It's really not necessary. It's really not necessary.
Here's why I like, he calls you BB because your name is Brittany. And that's probably a cute thing he calls you. But when you just said that, you made it sound like he was like your gay hairdresser. He's like, BB, we don't do that. Listen.
That's exactly what he sounded like. Because it lives in Miami and his in-laws are like from Long Island, I think. Saying that? And so they like, he gets from Gamma and Poppy, like this incredible accent. Like I said, I was like, this is your Gamma voice. And he was talking to me like, BB, we don't eat people. Okay?
It's
not necessary.
It's trashy. Okay. Yeah, that was his.
We're beyond that.
We're beyond eating people. Thank you so much. I love that. That brings us right back to Lion because we were just talking about Leo. So I want to bring us into the family dynamic is built in here. Let's talk about Delta Ray. And there's a specific reason I really want you on this podcast, because we're going to be talking to a lot of Broadway folks, and there's a lot of musical theater listeners on this podcast. And there's a lot of exciting things going on with you guys. But let's just start talking about, like, give us some stories of the early days of Delta Ray before something clicked, before Bottom of the River really clicked and you guys started seeing this trajectory. I mean, what the hell was that for you guys?
God,
that's so scrappy and fun to think about. I love these kinds of things.
So many stories. I mean, we really did, like, carve out, I think we carved out a place to be, to grow and make things where, you know, when you're young, you play like an imaginary game, but you do it like in your room because you're a little bit worried that if like someone comes in, they're not going to get it. And like, they're going to mess with the dynamic. And you're like, I'm building a world, like, get out.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
That was us. Like, we lived together in this big house in the middle of nowhere. And I say middle of nowhere, I mean, we were 20 minutes outside of like the nearest grocery store. Like,
right.
I worked on a farm, like, for the first year of being in the band. And
so cool.
It was so cool. It was beautiful. We, you know, we were freezing. We couldn't afford, like, to heat that big a house. We sat around a fire. And, like, I never took my bathrobe off because it was, like, just a big blanket I could wear. And
You're also a 95-year-old grandmother, as we've established.
Exactly.
So that totally
I ate my soup. And then I remember really distinctly, once we found our drummer and our bass player, it was our first – we had a bass player, like, come out and play some gigs with us and play on our first EP, but – we had never done a tour with him. So when we were getting ready to do like our first big show and our first tour, and this is like, when I say big, I mean for 50 people, you know, which was big. I mean,
100%. This is a lot of work that goes into building this kind of trajectory.
Absolutely.
So
I mean,
big,
if you're playing in front of one, if you're playing at all, like,
God bless you.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, there was a lot of nights where we like played for the sound guy.
Yeah.
And
oh,
he had 100%. And he had his earbuds in listening to something else.
Something else.
but I remember after we set, we like decided Mike and Grant, these guys are it. Like, they're our vibe. They're our hang. They're our guys. You know, we've been the same six members for over a decade. And one of the first conversations we had as a group was we sat down on this like dirty carpet in the living room of this old retro house in the woods with like notebooks. And we like looked around at each other and said, like, let's ask some like big questions. Let's ask like, where do you see this band going? What do you want Delta Ray to be? Who do you want to be in it? Like, what do you want to contribute? Like where should we aim to be in 5 years? Where should we aim to be in 10? And it was just this dream conversation. Like, you know, what are your values? What are your goals? What are your goals outside of Delta Ray? It was super honest. And I mean, at that point, most of us said, we want to be the biggest band in the world. And now we are.
It worked out.
In a way, like, it worked out so much better than you ever plan. Like, the thing that you actually wanted found you. But I think, like, what was so beautiful was that kind of blind, like, I'm very into the tarot, and so it's the fool. It's like just going out, walking through your adventure without any knowledge of where you're going, without any real skills to bring to the table. You're just like, I just know I have to go, and I can't really like stick around here and get every duck in a row. Like, I'm ready to go just based on my internal energy. And we all had that. We had that dream and we had that drive. So that's one of my like nostalgic memories. I'll never forget, like, when I used to get home from the farm, Liz was teaching at preschool and we'd rehearse every night, literally.
No question. It was an every night thing. Wow.
Every night thing.
Love that.
I mean, it was just like, it was like, that was the kind of discipline. We didn't have a goal. It was so funny. It was practice. It was like a meditation. Anyway, we also worked because for the first year, I think the band paid each member $150 a month.
Wow.
That was all we made from the band. So we had to make our life other ways. And Liz lived on, or Liz worked at a preschool. And so she'd get leave. She and I would leave like right around the same time. I was going to the farm. She was going to the preschool. And then I would come home and she'd have already gotten home. And I was like covered in dirt. I was like so exhausted to the point where I would like trudge out of the thing and she would meet me on the deck. She'd untie my shoes. Like we made it a game where she'd untie my shoes so I could just like walk out of them and walk into the kitchen. And I'd make myself some grits and eggs and I'd sit down at the table. And I always had like a trash bag full of greens from the farm, which we all like lived off of. And so I'd make myself
literally lean times, very lean times.
Yeah. And I'm not joking when I say like it was really lucky that I had that I had that job because it kept us like supplied in eggs and vegetables for sure.
Wow. It fed you. Wow.
It did. And anyway, but then I would fall asleep at the table. Yeah. I would like make the food and I'd sit down to it. I'd put my head down and I'd just be asleep.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like, it was just cozy.
What you're describing, which is a kind of a, weirdly, it's been a theme in a lot of these episodes and just talking to people. And I think it's something a lot of young musicians and artists need to hear is that it's not about booking the gig. It's not about doing the one thing to, you know, you guys sat and had the meetings and you treated this like an enterprise, like you guys were the CEOs of this business that you were trying to build. And it's the difference between, and this is kind of what the theme is, not of this podcast, but just a similar through line we've had in all these episodes is for an artist, you can go for a job and get your gig and book a gig, or you can build a career. And you guys are so masterful at how you've done that. And, you know, just having worked with Ian and Eric a little bit when we were younger, they hold court and they say, here's what the plan is and here's what we want to do and here's who's going to do what. And there's a bit of that going on. And I can kind of just be a fly on the wall in my own mind on how those early days must have been for you guys. When all this started paying, I mean, for Christ's sake, you're eating green beans out of a trash bag that you were dragging around with you like some lunatic. Probably just
or like your dad, apparently.
Yeah, he's out of his mind. there's no farm. I think
you eat
just
out of a trash bag. That's how we do it.
It's horrible. I can't condone this. Please don't eat out of the trash, everybody. But when it started, when did you know it was going towards something? And because anytime that happens, like anytime you sign the contract, there's a holy shit moment. Anytime you see your name in a press release, there's a holy shit moment of it's working. I can't believe this is working. When was that for you guys?
Was it bottom of the river? Yeah. Bottom of the river was it, but it was a cascade of things. I think it was people starting to show up at shows. You know, we would go up to New York every month.
I used to see you guys at the dinky Rockwood venues. And
oh, yeah.
I remember one time at the Bitter End, Eric stopped the show and said, earlier today, we played at Washington Square Park. Yeah. I just want to know if anybody came who had saw us in the park, came to the show, and like four or five people started clapping. And I was like, what? That's amazing. It really, like, you guys had such a grassroots effort behind yourself. Anyway, I keep interrupting because I get so excited talking about it.
No, but I mean, that's exactly it. Because, and I'm glad you said that, because Bottom of the River, before it was a music video, before it was a recorded song, was our calling card. And it was because we could just, no instrumentals, do that song anywhere.
Yeah.
And like, I hadn't sung for a long time before I got in, like before we started this band.
Yeah.
And my voice was like baby, like not exercised. And Bottom of the River was like my workout, you know, it was like when I first discovered. Yeah. And I discovered like, this is where my voice wants to live. And so if I want to be able to do this, I have to like exercise it. And so a big way that I did that was busking.
Yeah.
So like at the farmer's market, when I was done selling produce, we would sing a song or, you know, putting on charity events and the main thing was also like knowing we weren't going to make any money at all from making right. music or playing shows. We took every opportunity that we could. We just ground through our first like year and a half of being a band. But then it really was about calling on friends who believed in us. And if we weren't making music that we had believed in, we wouldn't have reached out to anybody. But it was that feeling that you get where the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, where everyone in the room is like, we just vibrated like to another level. And then you can say like, that's bottom of the river. Like when you sing that all together and the harmonies come together and our drummer just pulls out a chain that he carries around because he's a murderer apparently.
Yeah, like, he's in the roughest of gangs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Then you just you're sort of like, something's happening. And so it empowers you to say, and you have to be really critical. I mean, like, we made things and then we were like, that sucked. Like, how do we bury it?
Sure.
Kill it, bury it in the backyard. Like, that wasn't good. And you have to be really good at that too, so that when something good happens, you can be like, I trust that this is good enough for me to go out on the limb and call that friend who I know makes videos and see if they'd make a video, to call that friend in a dance troupe, see if they'd dance in it, to call those friends who like are just down people who are down to do stuff and see if they'll stand out in the middle of the cold, freezing rain holding a giant light that's supposed to be the moon on a kiddie pool full of water so that we can do 13 takes of this music video, bottom of the river, and pay everybody in pizza. And that's what we did. And it was an all-night shoot. And it was, you know, it was organic AF. And then we sent it to 300 blogs, you know, everyone tip-tapping away at their computers. We had another friend who was like better organized and better at answering emails than us. And we were, he was like, do you guys need help? And we were like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was that basically, do you guys need a manager? Was that basically what that was?
Yeah. And he was like, I live in DC, but I'll just send some emails for you.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was it. Cause those emails he sent literally led to us. He reached out to a friend of a, and their dad was a doctor, and the doctor's patient was the daughter of a huge guy, Seymour Stein in New York. And our EP made its way into his hand, and he said,
mind-blowing.
Send them in. I mean, it's an old school story. It doesn't even feel like
you don't hear that stuff anymore. You don't, you just, that just doesn't even exist that I've heard of lately. Or even
the fact
around
that a physical anything went anywhere.
That's crazy. I mean, and then within that first year of that video kind of circulating, it went quick. It was wildfire. The video went viral. You guys were on Conan. You guys were on The Tonight Show. Am I correct in saying that? You guys really blew up with that song. Yeah. And but beyond the song itself, I want to get to this next little portion here. And it's about your fans. And it is rare that you come by, you guys even refer to them as your diehards, because they really fucking are. They really fucking are. And the one thing I really like about being in the theater community is that theater fans are louder than Star Wars fans. Yes. They are big, fucking crazy, fucking dedicated. They know all the lore. They know everybody's middle name. They know your shoe size. They're fucking nuts about it.
Yeah.
And then there's Delta Ray fans, and it's a religion. It is.
It is.
You guys have the gift of these followers of yours, and they support you blindly, it seems. This music speaks to them in a way that I think they're going to start naming their children Brittany, Ian, and Eric and stuff like that. And I know his name is Grant, but I'm going to say it right here on the podcast. I wish to fuck that Grant's name was Doug. He looks like a Doug.
Interesting.
You heard it here first, folks.
Well,
we
call him any name that starts with a G. So I will call him Gug. Or
thank
Dud.
You. No. Gug is so much better. Gug. Gug is also the sound a fish... It's the last sound a fish makes before it dies. Gug. Our bass player, Gug. Oh, my word.
He's going to love it.
I have lost my mind. I had a lot of sake last night, and the hangover is like feeling great. When's the last time you were hungover, Brittany?
Oh, gosh. After, actually, I have a great friend who lives on a farm and out here, and she's a badass. And I always try and get her, lure her away from her farm because obviously she never leaves it. She came and sat in the backyard, and we killed a couple bottles of wine. And the next morning I woke up and was just like, I don't know how you woke up and ran your 30-acre farm, but...
Yeah, that's crazy because I have diarrhea running down my leg right now. And the fact that you're farming is just a bummer to me by a lot. Okay, sorry. Back to Delta Ray real fast. Thank you for going on that hangover tangent with me. Your fans, yes. And it brings us kind of right to where I want to make this the cornerstone of this conversation a little bit is the Kickstarter that happened. Bit over a year ago, am I right? Is that right time-wise?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. It had just ended.
Attention that got was explosive. And the money, I don't think I donated, but I think I signed in to donate. And then I was like,
they're
fine. I'm going to hang on to my money.
I actually need this.
Yeah, it's $25, but like that's going to beer money, honestly. But now I watch you guys doing all that you can to give back, and the announcements you made about whatever live performance and opportunities you guys were doing, the two albums, the live album, and all of that was kind of squashed because of, in terms of promoting and touring, was squashed because of the circumstances and COVID-19 and this pandemic that was so beautifully run by our government in this wonderful country.
I'm sorry, it's a plandemic? Thank you.
Oh yeah, sorry. It's a plandemic. And now you've got this new thing, which is a part of the give back, which is this musical that you guys are writing. So I want to preface this by saying, part of how we got to know each other as children was through an a cappella group called Till Dawn. Shout out Till Dawn. What? But more specifically, you, me, Liz Hopkins, Eric, and Ian, we all grew up doing musical theater together when we were kids in the same company. And you're kind of going back to your roots and bringing that and incorporating it into what you guys have created as Delta Ray. What, as a professional musical writer myself, because I have nothing but stress nightmares and wake up to another.
What are you guys thinking? Why are you doing this?
Fistfuls of hair on my pillow every morning when I awake. How is this going? And what are some of the hurdles? And this is quite collaborative because there's five of you creating something. What is this experience like? I'm so excited to know.
Well, I'm very thankful that at this phase, it's three of us, because once the group gets involved, I actually think it gets much more rich and beautiful, but it's better if somebody has laid out the framework and then
that's part of the process. You guys put a foundation down and then everybody builds the house together, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
So Ian, Eric, and I are working on it, you know, sporadically. Ian's got a newborn, and Eric and I are doing the bulk of the, generation of creative content for socials and stuff for Delta Ray. So, and getting these albums ready. But this musical, so our fans helped us raise, can I brag about this?
Please. I was going to say the dollar amount, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I've got all the figures logged in my memory perpetually, but we wanted to raise $30,000 to make one album, because it'd been 5 years based on all of the trials and tribulations of being on different labels. It'd been 5 years since we released a record.
Yeah.
So we wanted to raise $30,000 to do that. But if we raised $60,000, we'd release two and they'd be called The Light in the Dark and they'd give our fans kind of what they wanted. We raised $30,000 in 30 minutes. We raised $60,000 in an hour. Yeah. And by the end of the whole campaign, we raised almost $500,000.
Can I just be honest?
Yeah.
If that was me and I raised that much money, I would have been like, I'm buying a house in Mexico. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, suckers. I'd change my name to something else. I'd never see you idiots again. I'd take your cashola and I'd peace the fuck out.
Well,
anyway,
that's
but that's me.
The difference
but that's me.
Between you and me. No, I
that's the difference between a lion and a tweed wearing gray fox.
See, but that's what makes you foxy.
Sneaky. Oh, sneaky fox.
So yeah, I mean, I think that we were in that moment, like, just excited by the opportunities, like, that were possible based on what people wanted to give. And I think, like, we didn't, this literally could have been the moment where we folded, and, like, it's very vulnerable to go public and do a Kickstarter. So if you've done it at all again, like, we did not expect it to go well. I'll just say that we didn't. We were like, you know, why would anyone care? We haven't put out music in a long time. And when we do, it's kind of it just goes out there and it, hopefully it lives and maybe it doesn't, maybe people hear it. So yeah, this musical was the final stretch goal of reaching, if we got over 5,000 backers, we would write and stage a Southern Gothic musical. And we did. We got 5,160 backers.
Good
and
Lord.
It was, it was a relief. I mean, it was a relief to be able to say, like, we are doing it and we have to do it. Like, once we say it out loud to our fans, to whom, like, I love our fans. Like, the religion goes both ways. Like, I just think they're the most, I would say our fans are, like, primarily Hufflepuffs and Gryffindors. And, like, I just
These are Lord of the Rings and Star Wars references for anybody listening.
Okay,
right.
How dare you say that? Unbelievable. And I know you, like, painted that button on my forehead and then you pressed it. Okay, all right, Drew. But the... but we do have that overlap with our fans. We like the same shows. We like the same movies. We, like... There's a groundswell somewhere in there that we're
there's
like
simpatico, absolutely, yeah.
And so we know that when we're making stuff, we want to just close the doors again on our secret world to say, like, don't come in here, like, it's not ready yet.
Right.
But with our thing behind the door, which is like a subscription service, and it's like the Netflix of Deltaray. We are recording, like we're doing right now, every session, every writing session for making the musical.
You're so really letting people watch the process.
Literally, like the Google Doc, the shared work of writing and us. Like,
I mean, even the
shit.
Tedious, mind-numbing, like, silence that happens in these conversations. And...
We're cutting those parts out. And also the moments where somebody, like, goes down a really... Video. Yeah, I mean, you have to be able to, like, you have to have the freedom to know that you can fix it in post. But, but I mean, the majority of it, or, what's interesting is making the cut. And then we're sharing it with our fans in this thing behind the door. So literally, like, we've got 2 hour long or half hour long episodes out right now. And you can hear 3 songs already written from this musical. And honestly, like, I can't, I don't want to be too excited about it, but they're so good. I'm so
excited
about the story.
Are you kidding?
It's like the music is just... It gets you, like, it is the best of Deltaray stuff mixed with like Les Mis, Phantom of the Opera, Wicked, and Jesus.
I've never heard of any of those shows. I don't think anybody listening has heard of
those
shows. So
nobody's
don't use
heard
such
of them.
Underground references, please. I said this to Eric once before, and I mean it. I don't know how, but if there's ever a New York thing, a producer or whatever you guys need a hand with, I'm the guy that wrote the fucking Skittles musical, so I'm pretty connected. Skittles was it was really a big deal.
I've never heard of Skittles. Is that some kind of what product?
Skittles,
is
it's actually just a nightclub.
Litter? Okay.
No, it's a nightclub that we were just promoting that day Super Bowl, weirdly enough. Anyway, but I mean this because of my connection to you guys and my excitement about your music in general, and my involvement in musical theater, if ever there is a way I can help out without taking credit or whatever, I really want to help make sure this goes as far as it can.
That's
because,
amazing.
Frankly, your fans deserve it. You guys are of the giving spirit at 100% of the time, and this is such a feat. And I know that there was money given and all that, but even still, I hope everybody listening who is a fan of yours understands the undertaking of writing a musical. It is so, so hard and painstaking. And you guys are in this first stage of it. If it goes further, there's going to be rewrites. And then it's a whole bunch of starting over again in these processes. That's what people need to know. They need to know how much work you guys are doing. Of course, for you, but for them, for them, for them. And that is a big, big deal. I love how giving you guys are to your fan base. It is a beautiful thing to watch. Really.
It's such a good feedback loop. Thanks, Drew. Yeah, I mean, it literally is, it's symbiosis. You know, we breathe the oxygen that they make. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
It's a big deal, and we don't even know what we're getting ourselves into. I mean, mostly I think we're going to call you at the point at which we get to the place where we're like, we can't do this. And you're going to be the one who talks us into keeping it going. So, but also there's an evil preacher in the, cast. So I'm just wondering like if you're,
oh, are you offering me?
I'm just saying, like, you might want to do a table read for it, and we'll just see.
I'll see if I'm available. I'll say that. I'm available. I don't know if you guys can afford me, but we'll have
probably
my people
not.
Talk to
we
you guys.
Only pay in pizza. That's our problem.
No, then you can definitely afford me. That's I thought you were going to say something like green peas out of a trash bag, but now that I know it's pizza, I am 100% on board to do whatever it is you guys
You're
need.
You're right. I actually don't know how much pizza you can take in being a Gasparini. That's actually
more than concerning. Any other human
we
on this whatever
it.
Like a we jacuzzi, can't. A jacuzzi's worth of pizza. I'll say that.
Man.
I want to wrap up cuz we're hitting an hour right now, but I just want to say real fast Brittany, my dear God, I am so in awe of you. What you in particular, you and Liz have done for rock music and being a powerful woman, and what you guys in Delta Ray have done for not just writing amazing and uplifting music and thought-provoking music, but music that represents social justice in the times that we are living in. Since before Trump, for Christ's sake, you guys have always had your thumb on the pulse of what is morally right, what is good in the world. You guys do nothing but bleed yourselves out for others, and I commend you greatly for that. I've known you for such a long time. I couldn't be more proud of all your guys' success. And the fact that you're entering the realm of musical theater at all only tickles me pink because I know what that world feels like. And it's kind of like an about time moment that you guys hop in this strange little pool with me here. And I don't know what else to add except for I can't thank you enough for taking an hour to talk to me and showcasing your lovely dogs and talking about your family and all this kind of stuff. Is there anything you'd like to say to listeners who are maybe not Delta Ray fans but are Broadway fans or musical theater fans or to your fans right here on this platform? But here you go. Go ahead and say whatever you want.
First of all, I just have to say thank you so much for your kind words. I got goosebumps and I'm kind of reeling from them. I feel dumbstruck. But yes. Thank you so much for having me. I think that one thing Delta Ray has known for so long, and one of the reasons it's feeling so good to write this musical, is that that thing I was describing, where our fans were on the same plane, and there's a big cultural swell. I know that we share that with people who love Broadway, and so if you haven't heard Delta Ray but you love harmonies and you love singing at the top of your lungs and you love music with like a beautiful and heartfelt and complex message and like deep lyrics, please check it out. It's got four different lead singers, so no matter what your vocal range, like, you'll be able to crush it. And
yes.
And also to our fans, like, I hope you hear reflected in what Drew's saying and what I'm saying that you're really remarkable. It's not just that we love you because you love our music. I think we feel like there's something happening outside of you guys and outside of us that you're building that makes us feel inspired. That is, it's hard to describe, but you're creating a community. Our fans create a community that is full of love and care and commitment and loyalty and carries that fire, like carries that morality and bends the arc of history towards justice. And that is a cool thing. It's amazing when you can feel that way about the people listening to your music. What a gift.
Beautiful. So. Just beautiful. Brittany, thanks again so much. Please tell Eric and Ian and Liz and the rest of the band that I say hello and I love them. I love you as well. I really thank you for your time.
And I love you, Drew, and I love your whole family. Please give my love to everybody and kiss your pup for me.
I will. I will absolutely do that. All right. Thanks, Brittany.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Now We're Talking with Drew Gasparini. That's me. Now We're Talking is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find out more about me and this podcast at bpn.fm/Now We're Talking. And of course, on Instagram at Drew Gasparini. What am I doing? Hey, special thanks to our guest, Brittany Holgis. Gosh, I love her. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. And keep tuning in for more amazing guests. Until next time, you guys, keep coloring in those coloring books. Yes.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.